This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Well, good morning and welcome. If I ran my business the way you people operate your schools, I wouldn't be in business very long. I stood before an auditorium filled with outraged teachers who were becoming angrier by the minutes. My speech had entirely consumed their precious 90 minutes of in-service training. Their initial icy glares had turned to restless agitation. You could cut the hostility with a knife. I represented a group of business people dedicated to improving public schools. I was an executive at an ice cream company that became famous in the middle 1980s when the People magazine chose its blueberry flavor as the best ice cream in America. I was convinced of two things. First, public schools needed to change. They were archaic selecting and sorting mechanisms designed for the industrial age and out of step with the needs of our emerging knowledge society. Second, educators were a major part of the problem. They resisted change, hunkered down in their feathered nest, protected by tenure and shielded by bureaucratic monopoly. They needed to look to business. We knew how to produce quality, zero defects, total quality management, continuous improvement. In retrospect, the speech was perfectly balanced, equal parts of ignorance and arrogance. As soon as I finished, a woman's hand shot up. She appeared polite, pleasant. She was, in fact, a razor-edged veteran high school English teacher who had been waiting to unload. She began quietly. "We are told, sir, that you manage a company that makes good ice cream." I smugly replied, "Best ice cream in America, ma'am." "How nice. Is it rich and smooth?" 16% butterfat," I crowed. "Premium ingredients?" "Super premium. Nothing but triple A." I was on a roll. I never saw the next line coming. "Mr. Vollmer," she said, leaning forward with a wicked eyebrow raised to the sky, "when you are standing on your receiving dock and you see an inferior shipment of blueberries arrive, what do you do?" In the silence of that room, I could hear the trap snap. I was dead meat, but I wasn't going to lie. "I send them back." "That's right," she barked. "And we can never send back our blueberries. We take them big, small, rich, poor, gifted, exceptional, abused, frightened, confident, homeless, rude, and brilliant. We take them with attention deficit hyperactive disorder, junior rheumatoid arthritis, and English as their second language. We take them all, every one. And that, Mr. Vollmer, is why it's not a business. It's school." In an explosion, all 290 teachers, principals, bus drivers, aides, custodians, and secretaries jumped to their feet and yelled, "Yay, blueberries, blueberries." Vision for education, transformative teaching. The world gets this, don't they? If you watch the news, the world gets the opportunity to transform children. They're driven by an agenda, aren't they? We're troubled with that agenda, aren't we? Of course. But they know if they can get in the hearts and minds of children at a young age, they can tell them almost anything. And they'll believe it. Of course, this is used across the world, right? From communist countries to religious teaching and, hopefully for Christians, for character formation. I hope we get it too. The best thing about teaching is that it matters. The hardest thing about teaching is that it matters every day. You teachers understand that, don't you? What an exciting thing to teach. It matters. I'm making a difference. I'm impacting these children. But then the next day and the next day, through really good days, through tough days, through good weekends, through bad weekends, Monday morning comes, your best foot forward every day. Matters every day. Let's not forget that. So Christian education is not only a protection. It is not just what we don't do. Okay, so let's go back to, and I'm not old enough to remember all of this, of course, but back to why Christian education. Wasn't some of it an alarm in what was happening in the public school system? And we see this still today. We talk about this, don't we? We say, oh, we're so glad we have Christian schools. Why? Well, we're glad we have Christian schools because of all the bad things happening in public schools. So it is that. But I think sometimes we're maybe stuck with that. So it's sort of what we don't do. Well, Christian education is so much more than what we just don't do. If I would write a list of everything that's going on in public schools and we say, well, we're Christian educators, we don't do this, we don't do that, that we do, yep, not that, yep, no. Oh, that's who we are now. We're secular education minus all the bad stuff. Well, there's truth to that. And when we hear what's happening in the public education, we're glad we have the option for Christian schools. I'm not minimizing that. But transformative teaching is not just about what we don't do. It's not just about being so glad we don't have to expose our children to all of that. But Christian education is also a provision or an opportunity. It is what we do do. It's not just what we don't do. It's what we do do, what we should do, and what we have an opportunity to do. So what are we doing? Can we get a hold of this a little bit? What, doesn't it feel a little elusive sometimes? A little hard to put skin on it? So what are we doing anyhow? Christian education, transformative teaching. So now what is this? It can be a little hard to really get a hold of. Well, my mind goes to Ephesians 4. What a beautiful passage. We're not going to take time to turn to that. God gave the gifts to the church, and teachers are included in that list. For what purpose? In typical Pauline style, it's one phrase kind of after the next, but it ends with, until we all come to faith, and keeps going through this, and it says, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of not you. The goal is not to make your students like you. You know better. The goal is to make our students to be like Christ. Under the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. Transformative teaching, number one. Opportunities come with time and trust. So maybe you just went to a training session. Maybe you just graduated from Faith Builders. And this is not a smack at Faith Builders. I think you know better. I hope so. But we have these ideas, and we have these things that we would like to implement and do. And in fact, we have a vision we can see where we can transform the school. In fact, it about all needs to be transformed. And day one, let's get moving. You know, you can destroy your opportunity if you're not careful. And I've seen this done. I was talking to school very recently, and this high energy, new teacher, it sounded like, whoa, I mean, this is wrong with the curriculum. That's wrong with the curriculum. And it's just kind of, people are sitting back kind of like, wow, you know, I knew we needed you, but wow, we need you that bad? I mean, really? Opportunities will come with time and trust. There is a longevity that will open doors that you better just be patient with. You must earn trust. You will gain the right to bring some changes. And I would also like to say, I think we need to focus more on discipleship of the individual than cultural change. All right? Because we can get caught up on this cultural change thing. This needs to change. That needs to change. Wow. But no, wait a minute. This is about the individual, not about cultural change per se. It will slowly but surely change culture. But you understand the difference? We can get kind of caught up in, got to bump it up here, we got to bump it up there. This got to go, that got to change. But at the end of the day, it's about what's happening in the hearts of these children. It's about people, not a program. And we get kind of caught up in the program and the image that comes with it, but it's about the individual child, the individual person. Number two, I am not indispensable. So now you are there for a few years. You've gotten your slot. Now you've got your right. Well, that comes with its downfalls as well, doesn't it? Those who are long-term teachers know. If we're not careful, we sort of see ourselves as, you know, the school name and my name are sort of the same thing. You know, it's pretty synonymous almost. And we can create an identity in who we are as teachers. Who am I? I'm an educator. Oh, didn't you know? I mean, I'm an administrator. I've been in this for a long time. Can't believe you didn't hear my name. You know, sort of like, you know, it's me. There's a lot to think about this, teachers. When your identity becomes in your work, in what organization or ministry you're connected to, there's a lot of pitfalls that go with that. We become pretty touchy at that point because now we've earned our right and we know how it should be done. And when our ideas are not appreciated or accepted, then we can feel, wait a minute, I'm being disrespected. We can start feeling like we're taken advantage of. Our one teacher, she told me one time, she said, I just feel like quitting. Then they'll know. Well, I don't know if she really finished the sentence, but sort of they'll know what they have in me, sort of down that line, you know. Then they'll know. I feel like quitting, you know. So there are advantages that come with longevity. You earn the right to speak into the lives of people, to shape some things that you feel should be changed, could be changed. But it also comes with the pitfalls of identity, becoming pretty touchy when people don't follow, and then feeling like you're taken advantage of. And I would just like to say this, for long-term teachers, if you're going to teach in the long run, you're going to have to accept that some of that is going to be, it's just going to be there. If you need people patting your back and an endless flow of, you are just so wonderful. If you have this insatiable desire for praise and affirmation, you'll probably quit and be a bitter person. And this can happen. You have to keep coming back to, why am I teaching? Is this the call of God on my life? Is the hand of God on my work? The focus is on the children. And some of that you just need to be able to just deal with and not become bitter about that. All right, number three. Closely connected, cultivating a servant heart. I would like to read these verses because I'm just always impressed with how Jesus takes over and over, obviously, what we think, what is our propensity in our thinking and who we are and what makes us successful, and just completely turns it on its head, doesn't he? And so Jesus over and over said, well, people think this way, or it was this way, but now in the kingdom, we need to think in a different direction. So Matthew 20, I'm going to read these verses. The context, of course, is the two who said they want to be great in the kingdom of God, and God explains some greatness. And compare, I'd like to just think of it as a Gentile versus a biblical view. But Jesus called unto them and said, ye know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them, and they that are great exercise authority upon them. But it shall not be so among you. But whosoever will be great among you, let him be your minister. And whosoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant. Even so the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life a ransom for many. So is there a tension or an irreconcilable dichotomy between authority and then being the servant? In other words, do we need to lay down our authority to be a servant? It can almost feel that way in that first verse, right? Those who want to be great, they want authority. But he does not go on to say that if you want to be a servant, then you don't have any authority. Because that wouldn't even be true, would it? Did Jesus lay down all his authority? No, he did not, did he? So authority has the ability, of course, to be abused. But authority is also opportunity. So think of it as a teacher. You have limited authority as a teacher. You have the students under you. You, at some level, those are the people you can serve. If you are a school administrator, you obviously have more authority. You can self-destruct with that authority. Or you can serve even more people. So the greater the authority, the more opportunity. So there's this tension, but it's not either or. It is servanthood through authority rather than authority or servanthood. So embrace it if you're an administrator. Embrace it if you have students that you have authority over. It's opportunity. But beware of the self, of the part that can destroy you so easily. Maybe we need to be more honest with each other. What we see in each other. What are the things that show that this authority is ruining us rather than creating opportunity? Number four. I'd like to camp out a little bit on this one, and I'd like your thoughts. Rather than waiting till the end. Effects of technology. I would be curious what technology is in your school. As a rep, I visit 50 to 70 schools a year. Of course, I see schools with no technology. And I know you can say, oh, we're driving a car's technology. But you know, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the recent technology as can be used in our schools. So some have no technology. And other schools, of course, have a lot of technology. So I would love if you'd be willing to give a couple comments here. Now, you want me to do all the talking. What's happening in your schools? What are you seeing as advantages in technology? Because transformative teaching in this technology, there's some significant connections. But I'd like to see what's on your hearts. Anything to share? Here's what we like. Here's what we're seeing as disadvantages. We got into it. We thought this is wow. But now, not so sure.
Grew up in a school without technology.
All right.
Had nothing. Most technology we had was little MP3 players, and that was the world.
How old are you?
No.
Keep going.
We could listen to our spelling words on.
Oh, yes.
And the teacher didn't have to read them to us. And anyhow, I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I actually am for technology, at least some extent in teaching. But one thing that I realized it taught me was that life is not just given the answers. We're not just given the answers to your problems in life. So someone made a comment yesterday in a breakout session that with the use of technology, even in the medical field, the knowledge is not so much in retention as it is knowing where to get it.
Okay. Interesting. I was not in that session, so I hope I don't say things that are duplicating.
It wasn't about teaching. It was in the trends session.
Okay. Thank you. Somebody else.
So I'm a new teacher here, so I might be speaking out of turn, but
no, sorry.
Our school curriculum has a computer class, and that's what I'm teaching.
Okay.
So the course we've taken is computers in the school, but they're not connected, so we have unconnected technologies.
Okay.
Teaching spreadsheets and writer programs and that sort of thing, I see the value and the merit in that. Also see the danger of being able to misuse it. Teacher's not present. There's always students that can get in and find out things that you think you had taken off the computers. That's been my experience.
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
I think one of the greater concern for me is just the whole way that technology has affected how our young people interact.
Okay.
The whole social media aspect and how that forms them into face-to-face relationships. I think we're seeing the effect of that in at least the schools that I'm associated with.
So there are skills that we do want to teach. Some schools choose to teach their students, and the only way to teach those skills is by using technology. How are you going to teach how to do word processing and spreadsheets on a blackboard, right? And it's going to work. So if there are skills that we want to teach, and I think I'm not at all speaking against that. I am just amazed, though, and I think a lot of you know this, that the people who've created these things are protecting their own children from them. How much sense does that make? So some of these people in Silicon Valley that are developing all this technology are sending their children to no-tech schools. Do a little research. It's very true. And one of the books I read, it says, it seems like these Silicon Valley gurus are living by the same principle of life as the drug cartels. Don't get high on your own supply. Now, how sinister does that feel? That these men are making billions of dollars watching it, what they at least think is ruining this next generation, so they protect their children from it. And here we are, sometimes, just grasping for it. I fear, and I hesitate to say this, but I fear that we are facing some pressures in our school systems toward this little bit of a professional model. Again, you can. I want to hear what you have to say, and you can say what you want. But I'm going to say what I want first. There's this push for elitism and professional. What are we after here? Are we after image? Yeah, like, what technology does your school use? Well, a little embarrassing, isn't it? We don't really use too much. Oh, really? Well, did you ever hear about this? You hear about this? You know, we can be intimidated by what other schools are doing and feel like we're just behind the curve. What is the motive for what technology we are using? I would like to suggest that the more we use, and again, I'll try to balance it, or you balance me out. I'm going to pull a little bit on the side. The more technology we use in our school, the more we are telling our students that school is really about what you learn and about the school, about the skills, and about the academic part of it. And you don't really need me as a teacher. I think it feeds into that thinking, which we have some problems with already, don't we? That we don't need mom and dad. We don't need to know what you... I can find the answers here. And we can feed into that, where the teacher's almost in the way of progress. How's this going to feel for preachers down the road? Unless they got the flash of PowerPoints and of, you know, video clips and all this stuff. I'm not opposed to you. I use a lot of PowerPoints. But not today. Wouldn't quite be fitting. It's just I don't have any diagrams that I decided it was of value. So we have this alarm going off in our schools and in our circles. And I'm just wanting to know when somebody's going to do something about it. If we don't like it, well, then we better do something differently. We better think about what are we doing in our schools that is feeding the problem that we keep talking about and keep talking about. We were talking about in CASB having a talk on technology, and one of the people on the committee said, no, I am so tired of this. We keep talking about it and talking about it. Until somebody's willing to talk about it and say, let's change something, we're just going to have another session on the terrible things that are happening to our people in technology. It's like, all right, so we didn't have any this past year. Maybe we will next year. I don't know. It's like, wow, yeah, we keep stirring, don't we? Because we're not quite sure what to do about it. Because we feel pushed in that direction to be a progressive school or to be a, you know, on the cutting edge school, are we missing the mark of the hearts of our children? Okay, so Psalm 78 is a beautiful passage. I'm going to take time to read while you start thinking of some things on the other side. I know I'm pulling a little hard on that side, and I accept that. I'd like to hear what your thoughts. So please feel free with that. But I would like to emphasize that there is nothing can replace the teacher. Nothing can replace the teacher. Transformative teaching is not going to happen through technology. You can't Google wisdom. And if we lose sight of the value of what happens as teachers interact with students, and we're imparting so much more than knowledge. See, if our schools are all about just imparting knowledge and raising smart children who make us proud on their tests and on national tests, standardized tests, well, then bring it on. Reminds me of a phone call I got years ago. He wondered if so-and-so was my student. I said, yes, he was. I said, smart kid. It's a call from the Army. He wanted me to be proud. Psalm 78, read a few verses. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old. This is how God intended us to train the next generation, which we have heard of old and we and our fathers have known. We will not hide them from their children, showing the generations to come the praises of his wonderful works. Now, the generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength and his wonderful works that he hath done. For he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers that they should make known them known to their children. Now listen to the next verse. That the generation to come, it's our children, that they might know them, not know about them, that they might know them, intimately know truth. Even the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children. This vision is way beyond what's happening today. How smart are our children? What skills are we giving them? It's way beyond what is happening in the heart of their children that they can carry it to the next generation. Sometimes we're not even sure if we're making it to this generation. This vision is to the next generation and to the next generation. That they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments. It's just a beautiful passage. Calls us to say, our teaching is to not just transform this generation, but to put something in their hearts that would be a resource for the next generation and the next generation. What are your thoughts? Or questions? Counter arguments?
I think that from my experience, there's nothing wrong with knowledge. There's nothing wrong with there being a pool of knowledge to learn from. But you're right that wisdom isn't found in a pool of knowledge. Mm-hmm. And the passage brings that out. The dark sayings of old. Mm-hmm. I found kids to be uncannily good. They know often where they can sense wise people. It seems like sometimes very well. And I think maybe as educators, the burden is on us to be interacting with technology in wisdom ourselves. And in wisdom and confidence in the Lord and understanding what wisdom is, not in fear and only like confused warnings. You talk about that constant stirring of kind of frustrated warnings. Mm-hmm. That doesn't come across as wisdom to young people. But to be able to see clearly there are problems here and to point them toward wisdom at the same time that we enable them maybe to use this in an appropriate way.
Right.
And that's a big job, but I think the burden lies on us to understand ourselves where wisdom comes from and be an example.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Thank you. Yes, let's not create an either-or situation here. It's either the teacher and all this wisdom and no technology, or it's rampant technology. Schools are going to draw a line at different places. That's why I'm not going to try to give, oh, here's how much. That's up to you and your culture and your setting. The motivation for technology, I think we need to think about. Why do we want this in our school? Is this about the glitz? Is this about the reputation? Is this about elitism? Or is this about, this will teach schools, teach skills that we really need this technology? Or sometimes we're limited in resources in our school and time, and so the children are making their own flashcards and some of those things, and okay. But what's the motivation? And also, remember that I think it's maybe a strong statement, but it's still going to kind of steer it in that direction, that the more technology we have, the more the students see technology as the source of information and puts you at a disadvantage in some ways, at least. And I hear this sometimes from teachers saying, well, my students just like, stop teaching me, get done. I mean, just get on, you know. Well, I can check that out. I mean, I can Google that, you know. Just kind of like the teacher's almost in the way. I love the saying at the bottom, or on your page, wherever it is on your page. This was written by a Hutterite person, I assume a young man, when COVID came along and somehow ended up in my email. It would be devastating to lose a large segment of our elderly people because it is in them that we maintain the repository of wisdom and of our faith that can only come through lived experience. Educators, board members, parents, if we don't teach our children this, we would be relegated as relics. Because we're in the old school, we don't get it. If our children don't learn to love and value the repository of wisdom in the older generation, I think of it as a line, and I don't have a board here to draw this out, but I do this sometimes for students. I draw this little line. That's you. I draw a little longer line. This might be me. I draw a longer line yet for my father. I'm honored that he's here. And I think of these lines. Technology pushes us to despise the line. All right? At least not appreciate it. Because, wow. Oh, I know that my mom and dad don't know. They have no idea. They're endlessly asking me how to do things. Yes, I do too on my own. I did just this morning. See, how can I get this from here to here real quickly? All right. I'm not a real high-techy person. You can tell, can't you? But valuing that line, we say there's something about the line that comes with the line, the length of the line. You understand what I'm saying? The length of your life. That can only come with the length of the line. And I think technology pushes our children to not understand that or appreciate it. The repository of wisdom and of our faith that can come only through lived experience. So we have an opportunity to impart this to our children, our students, a sense of wisdom and broader experience than they have. We're not here to make them look stupid. That's the worst thing we could do to our students, to act like they're ignorant. I like to tell students, the Bible says you can be wise. Go to Proverbs. Teach a wise man and he will hear. One of the greatest characteristics of a wise person is not a person who can talk. It's a person who can listen. And if children can listen, they can be wise children. And we can bless them for that. Don't make them look stupid and ignorant. So one side. The other side is we don't want children to think they have all the answers and come to almost despise the older generation. Let's teach them to love our older people in our churches. We value the wisdom. I don't care if they have no idea what a computer is. They have something through lived experience to offer to this next generation of how to live, not just what to know. Number 5, beyond the books, opportunity. So your job description is the books. If you even have a job description as an educator, I find a lot don't. Like, so you're going to teach. Do you know what you're supposed to do? Well, I'm supposed to teach. What does that mean? Oh, there's 20 books, you know. Our schools haven't done real well at describing. And part of that is unfortunately, we tend to think that school teachers, their job is to take the books and to teach. Right? Howard Hendricks. If the student didn't learn, the teacher didn't teach. Now, he's a great man. I'm not knocking whatsoever what he said. But let's not stop there. You know, my job is to teach. And I'm a successful teacher if my students learned. That's your job description. That is your responsibility. Opportunity, I would like to suggest, goes beyond that. This just gets into some careful territory. What is this opportunity? How far should you take this opportunity? Especially in this context of transformative teaching. I've vacillated through the years. Sometimes I'm like, all right, listen. My job is when these students come here is to prepare my lessons, know them well, know how to illustrate this, and teach them and make sure they learn. Got it. All right. Well, that's pretty comforting. Kind of boxes it in, gives us some shape and some definition, some edges. Well, but we know that it's an opportunity. There's not such nice edges on this, is there? Like, where are these edges? What does this transformation look like? How much can I reach into the life of a child? Where does it stop and start? We should care a lot about these questions. They're hard questions. And so I'm not going to be able to put lines on all of this because I don't always know where they are either. You need to find it in your situation. But we do not teach in a vacuum. Public school isn't teaching in a vacuum. You're not either. Even if you try to, we're going to have this pure academics. Well, of course not. You can't. We teach in a context of who we are as a person. And I would like to encourage us to take opportunities as you go through the day to speak into the life of children beyond the academics, beyond the books. I know we got schedules. We got to get moving. We got the next class. But teachers, take the time. If transformative teaching is time teaching. It is willingness to stop what we were going to do at times, not every day. Don't go down bunny trails every day. Don't wreck every class. They need structure. They sure do. I've told my students already, I think you all got a scheme just to wreck my class. What about this? What about this? End of the year, they wrote a huge list of all the different things we talked about. I wasn't sure to be proud about that or to be embarrassed. But taking it does take time. But it must be for a purpose, must be focused. We're not just telling stories all the time. But taking time. They have questions. They are watching you in ways that we hardly understand. Teachers, you're teaching other people's children. These are not your children. I'll admit, the longer I teach, the less qualified I felt in many ways. Not because I didn't know how to teach algebra better than I did the first year. I hope I do. Those skills should come with teaching, of course. But it weighed on me more and more. I remember the first day after school, 1989, I believe was my first year. I didn't teach quite all those years. I remember distinctly leaning back on that chair, putting my hands behind my back and thinking, whew, not too bad. That was a good balance of arrogance and ignorance, let me tell you. As time went on and I saw the impact of teachers and students who moved on, who are now preachers, and I've taught the next generation, and now some of those are teachers. Wow. You know what? These aren't my children. If I misguide them, if my transformation agenda in the hearts of these children is different than what God's would be, or even different than the parents, I'm creating a loyalty struggle here. I don't quit teaching school, but pray more and be more humble. Be more humble. Pray more. We have our limits as teachers. Pray that we don't overreach. We don't overstep and get into things we shouldn't. This can happen if you're a very compassionate relational teacher. You can overstep in the life of children in your effort to be a transformative teacher. Reach in here, reach in there. Let's talk about this. Well, let's talk about that. I see this in you. I see. We can overstep, but we can also back away and not take the opportunities. Where are the lines? Well, God bless you. You'll just keep praying and find your way. What opportunities God opens. Whatever you do, teachers, never reflect on the home or the church. This disturbs me greatly when I see this. Serious? Zero? Okay. I thought I had a few more minutes. No?
That's fine. You can say your last
point. Are you sure? I can open my book again. Because the last point, you can read C.S. Lewis, A Vision for Every Student. I'm not going to take time, of course, to read from Mark, where Jesus blessed every student. My question is this. Do you have a model where every student can be a success in your school? Do you have a model where every student can be a success? If it's all about academics, you're going to only have certain students who please you. You're going to hand back tests, and those who got a good grade, you say, good job, good job, good job. You hand others back. You don't say anything. You have a model where every child can be a success because each one is a creation of God. And in God's economy, they can be a success. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.